Καλημέρα, καλησπέρα, καληνύχτα. No matter where in this wild, wacky, and sometimes wonderful world you might be, thank you for making the Highbury squad part of your day. I'm sure you are all still relishing the thrashing of Sheffield United last night. And it's actually a coincidence that I have a Sheffield Wednesday legend on with me tonight. One of your favourites. I love talking football. And we're going to get into the mind of the footballer to the manager with US men's national team legend John Harkes. Let's rock and roll, people.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.
Welcome back, everyone. And to those of you listening on replay, thank you so much for joining us too. I know many of you will be this evening because there's a lot of football on, but we march on with our epic football discussions. And I'm delighted to be joined by one of my favourites back in the house at Squad Central, Mr. John Harkes, as Kev would do. Bosh!
Hello, hello. Thank you.
At ease, John.
Great to be on, Sophie. Thank you. And it's always a pleasure to spend time with you and certainly all the gooners out there in the Highbury squad. Great to be on with you. I love spending time with you and talking football, which we love, and also life. So thank you for being on. Thanks for giving me a chance to be back on.
Are you kidding? The last show we did was with Warren Barton and Rebecca Lowe, and everyone loved it. And I know we've had great conversations with Super Kev as well. And we love taking people down memory lane here a little bit. But also, I was thinking about you a lot because, you know, I know you're a fan, not a fan of the Arsenal, but you're an admirer of the club and in particular what Mikel's doing. And so a little bit later on in the show, we're going to talk about that football to manager journey. Having won a championship here as well as a manager, and you know, we'll get that perspective. What do you think? I put this picture up. You know, I love it. It's one of my favorites. Well, actually, this one is one of my favorites, but I have another one that's one of my favorites too, which is this one. You know, troublemaker. You know, righty. But
he's coming after me there, isn't he?
He's totally coming after you there. By the way, sorry, squaddies, good evening, at ease. I lose my manners when Super Kev isn't here. Our chief like officer is in the house, Tammy. Yes, hit that like button. Trev is here. Carol's here. PW is here. Galispera. Arsenal Adventure is here. Samir is here. Everyone is here. Karen's here. Thank you so much for joining us. John, when you see this picture, does it feel like yesterday, or does it feel like years and years ago, which it is, of course?
It feels like it was just last week, to be fair. And it's just such a great moment. And, you know, we can always joke around. I'm like, there's the fastest man on the pitch, you know, chasing me down, and I should be worried. you know, with him and Kevin and so many great players that have come through Arsenal, the club itself, and just great moments. And, you know, what a great moment it was for me, to be honest, you know, to be Wembley. But I look at that photo and I think to myself, disappointed that we lost. Certainly, I know all the gooners will be very excited that I said that. and again, a brilliant win for them yesterday against Sheffield United, which I'm okay with. Completely all right with. Just want to let that everybody know I'm very much okay with that. And one of my high school friends who I played with and coached with, Mike O'Neill, was actually at that game.
Oh, really?
Jersey. Yeah, from Kearney. He's like, Arxy in Sheffield. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, and he coaches the women's team at Rutgers. And he's like, I'm going to this game. You know, I know it's exciting for you. I go, no, that's the game. It's not, you know. But, what a big win. And but I look back on those times and I think about some of the quality and just the great, great games and moments. And certainly, again, it's personal and what it means to be on the field there. As an American player, punching through the ceiling and trying to prove to the rest of the world that, you know, in the men's game, not so much in the women's. The women were introducing football to the rest of the world back in the day, you know, from the U.S. But the men's side, we were like, you know, go home, yank type of things. And it didn't matter if I played in the World Cup in Italy in 1990 or, you know, that I potentially was going to play in another one in 94. You know, those games in 91 in the League Cup final against Man United, and then later in 93, both against Arsenal in the League Cup were incredible moments. They transcend the sport for me, and I've been able to achieve, you know, so much. But it's always about the team and the players and the managers and the fans that you connect with. And those are the memories. Those are the special moments.
You know, I wanted to take you back to 91. When you guys were the underdogs and in the old Division One, and you played Manchester United in the League Cup final. I think it was still the Rumbelows Cup that year too. Was it? Maybe it was the Milk. Right. Yeah, okay. And, you know, Manchester United team, Steve Bruce, Neil Webb, Gary Pallister, Brian Robson, Paul Lintz, Brian McClair, Mark Hughes, Lee Sharp. And then really that Sheffield Wednesday team too, though. You had Chris Turner in goal, Nielsen, Harksey, Pearson, what a captain, Danny Wilson, Sheridan, Hurst, Worthington. Trevor Francis was on the bench in that game. Which is kind of, was he injured? Is that why Trevor Francis was on the bench for that one?
No, I mean, thank God he was 37 years old and he still had the magic. He still had the magic. And, you know, I think, look, I mean, yeah, special moment. I mean, I can remember when we, you know, qualified for the final, and a lot of my teammates had come up to me and you know, just kind of, David Hurst and Sheridan. And I remember them saying to me, Danny Wilson, like, Arks can retire now. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, well, some players go 20 years and they don't get to Wembley. You've done it in 7 months by being over here, you know, and signing a contract the end of November. I was like, wow. So it's a special, special time. And one of those times, Sophie, that, you know, when qualifying for us for the first time in 40 years, as a nation for Italy 1990, and then the full circle becoming a pro and making it and chasing my dreams in England. You know, even the year before it became the Premier League, you know, and but what a special moment to upset. I mean, Brian Robson was a hero of mine. I mean, come on. I mean, I wanted to be like him as a midfielder. I'm like, I had his poster on my wall. I was like a kid going, I'm playing against Brian Robson, you know, Sparky Hughes, like all these players. And it was a dream come true. It really was. Mm-hmm. And here I was in the same arena, stepping on the same grass as these players. And but the biggest thing was, I've got to show up. You know, I've got one chance here, you know, to prove who I am, but also to show them that Americans can play this game. And it was a massive challenge, a big challenge. And we were very fortunate, and Sean Sheridan put that ball past Sealy, and we sealed the deal with the one to win, and it was a fantastic, you know, return to moments for Sheffield Wednesday, who were really starving for those type of trophies. And it was an amazing time.
Yeah, it kicked on from there. Real quick, do you remember your transfer fee? From, was it Albany? You were in Albany. You were at Albany.
He's trying to embarrass me. Bloody hell, woman.
Because your transfer fee to Derby later on was 600,000, which, you know, that was a lot of money back in the day. But I was just curious if you remember your transfer fee when you left the States.
I do. It was 90,000 quid.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. That is amazing.
And the funny thing about that was, you know, I just wanted to sign on the dotted line. I didn't care what salary I was getting. And I got a very low salary. But, it was interesting because back in the day, and you'll remember this, we've spoken, you and I and everyone about this, is that we were signed by the Federation. There was no real Major League Soccer here. It was very minor. It was very, you know, the American Soccer Leagues, and I was with playing as many games as I could with Albany Capitals just to stay fit so that we could play in the World Cup and qualify for the World Cup in 90. So they owned our rights, the Federation, which was the strangest thing in the world. It was like glorified club team, you know, playing your Federation, your national team. And so they had to pay the Federation a fee for me. Funny enough and lucky enough for me, Singalani, who was on the Federation at the time, knew that I was young and wasn't making a lot of money, and he gave me quite a good portion of that transfer fee.
That's amazing. That's,
so I was, yeah.
Really incredible. That was pretty sweet. You know, 91 really was, like you said, the kind of evolution of Sheffield Wednesday. We get to the end of the season in 93, and you make the League Cup final against the Arsenal. And another great moment for you, like you said, 7 months in, and here you are. You're beating Manchester United. A couple years on, you're playing against the mighty Gunners. And I wanted to kind of talk about that team too, because you had Chris Woods, Nielsen, Carlton Palmer then, Viv Anderson, who, by the way, apparently still owes Kev 50 quid, John. But I don't know if you remember Kevin telling you that when Kev first got to the Arsenal, he's cleaning boots and stuff, and he said Viv Anderson was the toughest on him and the one who really didn't want to put his hand in his pocket too much and pay up. Does that sound familiar at all?
Yes, it does, very much so. I completely back that. And Viv was a tight old geezer. And I'll be honest with you, but he was a great mentor. I mean, a great mentor. You know, when you talk about the days of him, you know, breaking ground himself, one of the first players to play in the England's national team. And, you know, just some of the accomplishments that he had, absolutely incredible. So for me, he was like the grandfather of the club, and whatever he said, I did. I didn't question him at all.
I love that.
He's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant, because he always wanted to teach. I thought he would have made a good manager. I really did. I thought he would have been a great manager, but it seemed like he didn't want to go down that pathway. And it's hard because you sacrifice a lot to be a manager. But yeah, quality player, man, quality person.
We'll get onto the manager thing, but while you said that, are the sacrifices much greater being a manager than a footballer? They've got to be, right, in terms of...
I think that, yeah, I mean, it's a great point and a great question, Sophie, because they're different sacrifices. And from a manager standpoint, you know, and I was managing at a lower league and, you know, with FC Cincinnati, you know, in the USL Championship, and then with Greenville Triumph, you know, we're building a club from the ground up. Imagine saying that in England right now, like, oh, you're resurrecting a brand new club, like out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. But the history tells that those leagues have been around for 150 plus years. You know, our leagues are still growing. We're still growing the lower leagues. But, you know, you look at the sacrifice, like you're managing 27 people. And when you're a player, you're part of a group, and you have to not only have the responsibility and accountability to manage yourself and what you bring to the table, but your big picture, you're part of a team. And so you've got to figure out how to blend into that. But as a manager, you oversee everything. And so what you end up having to do is you got to, it's a push and pull. And there's sacrifices. Yeah, it's 24/7 as a manager, without a doubt. There's a lot of players that say, well, you're 24/7 as a player as well, because you're committed all the time and you've got fit and ready to go and mentally and physically. But I just think from a responsibility and accountability part as a manager. It's a lot. You've got to be able to know what makes this player tick for today, and you've got to be steadfast and stoic in your approach. You've got to be, you know, good communicator and a leader. But from a leadership standpoint, you've got to make sure that you get those players to believe in themselves, not just believe in you as a manager. Mm-hmm. You've got to get them to believe in yourselves and the methodology and the what's the plan? How are we playing? Style of play, everything about that. So that's a daily basis. And there's a lot of work that goes on when you leave the training ground. And so you're first in and last out the door, but you want to be efficient with your work. But it's something you love. So you pour your heart into it, right? You pour your heart and soul into it. Sometimes it pays off and you have success, and sometimes it doesn't. It could be cruel and lonely, but
well, it was cruel. It was cruel for you and managers in that League Cup final, of course, George Graham and Trevor Francis. You know, Chris Waddle came into the forefront then. Paul Warhurst, Mark Bright was in that side. And then, of course, you know, the crazy happened at the end of the match, which none of us will ever forget. Arsenal, this is probably the wackiest thing that has ever happened. I mean, I know Sergio Ramos dropped the Champions League and Aubameyang dropped the FA Cup trophy as well. But as an Arsenal fan, this was crazy. Did you guys even know this was happening? And if so, after losing to the Arsenal, did you even have any sympathy for the fact that they were just idiots?
No, we didn't care. We knew something was happening, but we had heard that somebody had gotten hurt. And then I looked over at the very well. I mean, first of all, we're in the worst pity party, feeling sorry for ourselves, you know, as you do. You're crushed when you lose games like that. But the thing is, when you see a player on the pitch and they're like, somebody's gotten hurt, and the stretcher's coming over in their own celebrations, you're just like, what is happening? You know, separate from that, you're already wallowing in your self-pity that you've lost the match and you had a chance to win it again. And both, you know, like you said, we lost both cups there. So emotionally, I'm still scarred from that. Hello, any therapists out there, please listen to me. But the interesting thing is, and again, it's full circle, Stevie Morrow, you know, goes on to work with the academy. And Stevie came over here into the MLS as well with Dallas for a short period of time. And so we all know the stories. And, you know, I'm close to Tony Adams. And Tony Adams I got to work with, you know, and be in sport for a while on the media side. So we start telling stories. And I'm like, did you really drop him over here? Like, what is going on? Tell me the truth. What happened there? And he was like, yes, he fell. And he was too excited. And all these stories come out, you know. And it was incredible. It's just definitely incredible. But it was a shame that he went through that. But I'm showing up his medal. He still felt okay. You know,
yeah. You're cutting out just a little bit, but I think we're fine as long as the listeners can still. Yeah, I think we'll be good. Mark said, would you trust Tony to lift you up? And after that display, come on, Mark.
Oh my Lord, it's like that epic scene, you know, when what's his name lifts her up, Dirty Dancing.
Oh yeah, Patrick Swayze lifts Jennifer Grey.
I'd let Tony Adams lift me up for sure. Good one, Mark. I love it.
I love it. Absolutely brilliant. Then we get to the FA Cup final, and that team similar. Nigel Worthington. Wow, there's a blast. And Chris Bart Williams was on the bench. John.
Oh, God rest his soul.
Yeah, I know for you, like Chris and Trevor, you know, I mean, Kev always says to us on the show that there's just a brotherhood. When you play in a team, a special team, and that Sheffield Wednesday team was a very special team. And, you know, you've lost brothers, like, you know, your manager, he played with you as well. And then what happened to Chris? Just really difficult to kind of comprehend that those things can happen, and still so young as well. But I'm sure you miss them both a lot, huh?
Yeah, I do for sure. And such, you know, condolences always going out to their family and all of us as brothers, like Kevin said, and use a teammate or a manager. And it doesn't matter if you had a great relationship with them or a poor one or an indifferent one. It's just they were all part of the team. And it was just so sad to hear, you know, and Trevor, you know, his history as a player was so respectful, and as a manager, and learning about what he wanted to do and his management style and everything else. And then later he was a commentator, which I remember going to a game at Wembley, and he was working with Sky or something, calling the game. He's like, John. And I'm like, hey, Trev, how's it going? You know? So it's like you always see them. And with Chris Parr Williams was just such a young, talented, big smile, big heart. He liked the room every time he came in. And what a talent. What a young talent. And,
yeah,
you know, just to hear that sad news, it's just so difficult. And you want to just keep going, you know, because that's the biggest, you know, respect that you can give to players and managers that you're part of a team with. You know, it's when you're, there is a brotherhood. There is a brotherhood, without a doubt. And it's just the same, you know, there's a sisterhood on the women's side. There's such connectivity in the game that you love. And that's why you do it. It's because of the people around you.
Yeah. That's why I loved, and I've riffed off that a lot, Mikel Arteta's journey versus destination comment in All or Nothing. But in that 93 Cup final, now tell me, okay, so our team was Seaman, Dixon, Linegan, Adams, Winterburn, Merson.
Linegan.
sorry to mention his name out loud.
You're dragging me through the rocks, aren't you, kid? You just, hard save. Let's just hook you up to the back of the truck. And we'll just drag you through the rest of the... Just take me all the way down from Sheffield to London and just drag me down there, why don't you?
I know. Sorry. God. Paul Davis, Jensen, Parler, Kevin Campbell and Ian Wright. Smudger was on the bench with David O'Leary. But I've heard you, and tell me if this is right or wrong, you put the goal you scored, the absolute banger, up there... That means, I don't know if it means more to you, but the moment more than actually winning the League Cup against Manchester United. Is that true? Is that how you feel about that? Or
I wouldn't say that, because I think winning something as a team is the ultimate goal. That's the best feeling in the world. When you've shared the pitch and the sweat and the tears and all the disappointments, journey, and then you win something as a team, I think that's the biggest, you know, experience you can have. Scoring the goal was individually. It was and you see Viv Anderson there in the number six coming back from an offside position. But I'm glad they didn't bring VAR into it at that time. Seeing it as well. But no, I mean, scoring that goal at the top of the box and was a special moment, without a doubt. Individually, it was just wow. The score at Wembley is brilliant, but to score in a cup final like that against a historical famous club of Arsenal was even more special. And to go up 1-0 like that, I thought, man, we've got a chance here. You know, unfortunately, that wasn't in the cards. and we ended up losing that match. But yeah, great, great moments. And you see Chris Waddle there and, you know, just a quality player, talented player, great friend of mine as well. And look at that. I don't know if you would see that wall.
That's a great shot. I love this picture. Look at that.
Yeah, fantastic. Paul Warhurst, the center back who goes up and scores. What did he score? 21 goals in 1 year?
Yeah.
Training.
Yeah, it was what was, you know, I was doing a show with David Hillier a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about Chris Waddle. And how, because we were talking about Kai Havertz and players like Ozil, who may look lazy on the eye, but really the way they play, their positioning, their touch, their movement, the way they take drag players with them, open up spaces. Was Waddle frustrating? And do you remember that him being frustrating at all as a teammate or as fans being thinking he was lazy? Because there's a lot of Arsenal fans that kind of have felt that way about Kai Havertz. Not sure if they feel the same way in the last couple of performances, but that was something that I spoke to David about. And I wondered if you felt the same or you kind of knew of how maybe fans have felt that Waddle maybe looked lazy at times.
You know, it's funny because I don't think at the time, I think Chris was way ahead of his time as a player. I mean, from a talent standpoint and the creativity and the skill set, I think he's just way off. When he went from Tottenham to Marseille and then we end up getting him back at Sheffield Wednesday, I'm just blown away. I'm like, this boy is tying his boots in the dressing room and I'm looking at him. I'm like, is that Chris Waddle? What are we doing? Why is he here? But no, he was way above that. I don't think, honestly, that anybody, his work rate and his training habits were fantastic, to be honest with you. And he would defend not as much as the other guys, but what he did on the attacking side and the creativity and was absolutely out of this world. And so it was a gift to play alongside of him. And I'm very grateful that he's a close friend still today, and he's coming over here in the States and we're going to hang out probably in a month or so. Yeah, we've stayed really close, and oh man, his sense of humor is out of this world, Sophie. I don't know if you've been around him in a pub, but that boy will have you laughing with tears in your eyes. He's so funny. So I'm looking forward to getting back with him.
But that's awesome. You don't see him on TV a lot. You don't see him. He's really kind of living a quiet life, isn't he? Maybe you could drag him up here next time you're on. Maybe we could get a Waddle Harksey reunion. But you actually, the craziest thing I've seen is not Morrow and what happened in the League Cup. It's the duet between Hoddle and Waddle, Diamond Lights. Do you have a signed copy of Diamond Lights, John?
I'll get you sorted out. So I'll get you that, because he when I found out that, I'll be honest with you, when I was younger and I was making it over there and it was really difficult and stuff. When I found out that and I saw that on Top of the Pops, and I was like, that's embarrassing. He goes, what do you mean? We were brilliant together. And I said, first of all, you're the stiffest white boys. You can't dance. And you got no rhythm. And the singing, my God, you still got your accent, the Geordie accent. I'm like, what's going on? We would give him so much stick for that. It was, brilliant. Brilliant stuff.
That's so great. I still remember the lyrics. I'm sad, but let me just say, I loved it when footballers tried to be singers because it was hilarious. And I want to welcome David into the show. David is a massive Sheffield Wednesday fan. John is a Wednesday legend. Lots of gooners, of course, in the show, but it's always lovely when the Sheffield Wednesday fans show up as well. So welcome, David.
Very nice. Thank you, David. Yeah, great. Yeah. Great stuff.
What was your favorite? When you look at your time at Sheffield Wednesday, we did smash Sheffield United last night, and I know you're super happy about that. But were those derbies how many derbies? Because I'm going to be honest here, I can't remember if Sheffield United were in the top flight when you guys were, if you faced them in the old first division, but. I love those derbies. I love Newcastle, Middlesbrough, Sunderland, Sheffield United, Sheffield Wednesday. Some insane games over the years. Were they your favourite games to play in, the derbies?
Yes, they were. They were everything, because as a young kid, you know, I was following the game in Europe, and you know, when we weren't getting a lot of exposure to it. Like, I mean, it was almost in the days, Sophie, where we would get a VHS tape sent over to us of a special game. And we'd be like, wow, we get around our social club, the Scots American Club, and we sit downstairs and we put the tape on and watch the game. And like, that happened a week ago. So we were like, that is amazing that when you think about it, what drove you to be a player, to be a footballer. And I was a Liverpool supporter at the age of 11. And so I want to get over there, and I'm like, I want to interact and see football, and I want to go to Anfield and blah, blah, blah. But when you think about it, the derbies were like something that you'd never, as an American player, got a chance to really be involved in. You heard about it, you saw them, you knew the passion was there and the fight, but I never experienced Sheffield Wednesday, Sheffield United derby until I stepped on the field against the Blades away from home, and the city completely separated. And down one end of the city, the window panes were painted red. Mm-hmm. And at the other end of the city, the window panes were painted blue. You knew who supported who. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. But then I'll remind you of this. We actually played in the semifinal of the cup game at Wembley.
The cup game. Yeah. I think I have a picture. I think I have a picture of that in the FA Cup.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so that was interesting. It was the first time that a semi-final was played at Wembley. And it was because, there you go, right there.
Yes.
And yeah. And so the whole city was abandoned. Everyone in Sheffield was down at Wembley Stadium, filled that stadium, blue and white and red and white. What a remarkable time to be a player. Playing in a match at Wembley. It was just absolutely out of this world. And full respect to the players of Sheffield United. I mean, it's interesting at an American perspective on it. I would see some of them downtown after a game or whatever, grab a pint, and players and fans of Sheffield Wednesday would be like, what are you doing talking to them? And I'd be like, I don't know. They're footballers. They're players. Yeah, that's the enemy. And I'm like, okay, well, I understand that when you cross the line, that's the enemy. But off the pitch, they're people. They're human. So it was this weird kind of, people didn't know how to take me. They're like, why is he talking to the Blades, you know? And it was funny. It was just a weird kind of thing to go through at the end of the day, you wish people well. You don't wish harm on anybody, but you compete. I'm a competitor. I love to compete. And when you're across the line, you fight. And when you're off the pitch, you got to have a balance in life and be like, respect. And that's what I loved. I grew up in the Premier League. It was fantastic. I got to the old school, like you said, the old Division I. And then I got a chance to play in the Premier League, first American. But going to the PFA dinners at the end of the year and seeing the teams there represented and with the sitting at the tables and all the awards that go on and everybody getting together at a pint or Punch and Judy down in Covent Garden and all of these stories, all of these. And I'm like doing all this as an American. And I'm like, awesome. What is happening in my life? This is absolutely insane. And it was just absolutely brilliant.
I love how much you appreciated it all. Like it sounded like during the whole journey, you were really appreciating it. And I love the stories because Kev talks about it too. Like we used to run into Arsenal players at the pub. Fans would run into players at their local. And I don't know if it was the same when you went to Derby as well. 600,000 transfer. You go to Derby, and I believe you played for Jim Smith there too. But it sounded like, as an American on this journey, and I always talk about you as a trailblazer, the first American to play in the Premier League. You opened the door for the Brian McBrides and, you know, the players that came after you. You were the first American to score in a cup final, I think, since the late 1800s. I may be a wacky statting there, but it sounds like, John, you really enjoyed your journey and understood what it was while it was happening. Because a lot of people kind of don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Well, thank you, by the way. And I was just very grateful to have that experience in those moments. But, you know, earlier I was talking about, you know, Anfield and Liverpool and how special it was to me. And Sheffield Wednesday, I got to play against Liverpool at Anfield, and I scored a goal there ahead. And it's funny because you talk about all of these remarkable events. And, you know, I was at Wembley 5 times, 3 years.
It's crazy.
It's incredible. Like people go, what? Wait, what? I didn't know that. And I'm like, I know. But those were the days where not a lot of television was exposed in all the games. Nobody was seeing it. My dad was still listening to me on shortwave radio. I was playing at Sheffield Wednesday. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's how old I am. So it's like, but I do appreciate and I respect the history in the game. I always have. And I love studying the game and discovering more about certain clubs and the history of like an Arsenal and the silverware they've, you know, won and the play that I've come through that. And so it to me, I to go to Highbury, the old Highbury, was just wow. I mean, I'm like, come on, this is amazing. I mean, absolutely. The history that's there and special managers and players that have come through those, I mean, those doors, my goodness. Absolutely incredible.
So you backed it up, John. You're a really good player. Like you weren't, and I think that changed.
Did they tell you I was sending you a check or something? Am I supposed to be in comments?
Just Venmo me. You don't have to even send the check anymore. Just Venmo me. But it's true.
You kid from New Jersey, hardworking kid. I grew up with Scottish family. I respected the game. I was dying to get over there. It made me hungry. We were also a bunch of kids that were like the lost boys on the streets trying to play football everywhere we could in America. And I wanted to have a pro league back in our country one day. And for me to do that, me and so many others, we had to leave our country to go establish ourselves overseas and prove to the rest of the world that Yanks can do it. And we came back and eventually, you know, I was 6 years over there. And when I came back, we established Major League Soccer. And the first year was DC United for me. And, you know, and look where that is today. So it's a growing market. You know, it's a thing that we can be proud of. But we, you know, we were very fortunate to be part of it in those days. And so many great players. I mean, you talk about Kevin Campbell and, you know, Ian and Seaman and all these top players, Tony Adams and everybody. And it's just, you know, I mean, you can go on and go on and go on. It's like the top players in the world I'm competing against, the guys that I grew up like loving and idolizing on the pitch against, you know, Man United and stuff like that. So remarkable life that I've had. I'm very, very grateful. And I know it because of the people around me that helped me get there without a doubt.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then, of course, you know, you were and are absolute legend of the U.S. men's national team. The World Cup is coming here in 2026. Copa America here this year. Again, this team in 94, I think, took on the baton to really... I remember when the U.S. was awarded the World Cup, John. The world was freaking out, same way they did with South Africa. They can't host the World Cup. What is this madness? And it was bloody brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And you played in some an iconic game. There's Valderrama there, by the way.
Yeah.
What a player. But talk to me about that a little bit, like especially playing in the World Cup for your country, captain, 94, the world is watching, and America really delivered when everyone thought that it would be a total disaster.
Yeah, I mean, it's you think back to the pressure that we were under, to be honest with you. We qualified for the 90 World Cup in Italy, and it was the first time in 40 years we had been at that stage. So it was a massive absence of international football. And, you know, we were like tourists there. We lost every game. We got blown away 5-1 against Czechoslovakia in the first game. We lost very marginally to Italy 1-0 in the second game. So we gained a lot of respect. And then we lost to Austria 2-1, which we actually should have won that game. And then coming back here and, you know, the Federation did the best they could to make us competitive. We played all these tournaments every summer. I was playing a full season overseas in the UK, and then I'd have like 6-7 days off, and then I'd join in with the national team and play US Cup tournaments against Ireland, Portugal, Italy, you know, teams like that. And we'd play US England up in Boston. We played a friendly there, which we won 2-0.
Yeah.
And I won a lot with Alton Palmer as well. I'll let you know that because he's my teammate on the other side.
How much was the bet with Carlton? 20 quid? A bit more?
You know, for me, it was I can only afford 20 quid. And he goes, well, I'll give you 500 if I lose. So I'm like, all right, I'll take it.
Nice.
Yeah. But I would say the journey, it was amazing because a lot of people, and I saw some of the comments there, Lynn was saying that a lot of people back in the day, it was very special to play in the Premier League. And nowadays, there it is, Lynn Simpson saying that. And nowadays, it's maybe taken for granted. And I think it might be a little bit. I think she's onto something there because, you know, it was more special for me and other players, like, you know, like a Brian Bride or Clint Dempsey, you know, or these were all special players at their timing, you know, in the national team and fantastic players. I mean, the Brad Friedels of the world and everybody, and even Landon Donovan went over and had a short spell, you know, in the Premier League and stuff. So a lot of guys had, you know, had that experience and loved it. But back in the day, it was the hardest thing to break in because if you remember, Sophie, when we played in those seasons in 90 and 91 before the Premier League kicked in, you were only allowed two or three foreign players per team.
Yeah, yeah.
To be a foreign player on that team, you had to be one of the best training players every single day to survive.
And only two subs, John, so even harder to get into a squad.
Absolutely. That's true. And people today, they laugh at me and they're like, what do you mean you only had two subs? I'm like, honestly, you go back to the YouTube days and you watch our games, our old games, and they're like, and listed as subs and there's two players there, Sophie. You're right, 100%. So, look, I mean, it was remarkable. And, you know, to think about where the game has gone, even the Premier League, if you think about it, it's a machine. Some of the best players in the world started, the influx of foreign players coming to that league. What a transition that, you know, everybody in England must have been like, whoa, what's happening here? You know, all of a sudden it was like some of the English teams, you couldn't even get an English player on the starting 11, you know,
because so many foreign players. Happened to my club and the way everything changed. Super Kev always says as well, like he reminds me too, like when he grew up in the Arsenal system and to break into that team. And one of the things he says to me, he goes, Soph, there were only two subs. And it was so much harder to break into the first 11. And especially as a young kid, when you've got all of these seasoned veterans, legends kind of playing around you as well. And it is, and I think, you know, Lynn does bring up a good point and the way you articulated it, it's everything's become easier. Maybe. I don't know. You know, when some people say the modern game just isn't the same, what do you think they mean by that, John?
It's the same. It's advanced a little bit. I think people reflect back and they say the modern game isn't the same. It's not, it's changed because there's so much more money that's into it. It's a show, it's entertainment. I get that part, but maybe it was more like real rugged players back in the day. I'm like, well, you know, it's all part of growth, right? I mean, you have to start somewhere. From the days of watching, you know, videos and, you know, when it's in the 70s and 80s, when it's on mud pitches and tackles are flying in a crazy, crazy. Ray Hudson over here says that I went over there to play when there was men with tattoos on their tongues, you know, and I was like, you know, it's funny because it was always so, the thoughts and the memories are all about hard, aggressive, but there was so many creative, talented players too. So it's all about perspective, you know, about what people really remember, what the game's like. Of course, it's going to grow. It's going to change. It's the same on the women's side. You know, we talk about women's game, how much it's changed now. And you see now where the U.S. women are in transition, you know, and you got Emma coming over to match them. How important is it for them to start over with young, fresh, new ideas and new players coming through to back in the days when the 91 and 85 and 99ers won all the Women's World Cup for the U.S. team and set the toll out to the world. They're the one who introduced women's game to the world. So it's changed. Yeah. And it's a big business now. But there are still so many quality players and quality managers like, you know, Pep, you know, Arteta, like all of these top managers that are making their way and their ideas in the game. I think it's fantastic.
It's funny because when I first started covering the US women's national team, it was in 2011 during camp. You remember those January camps, John, very well. And it was before the 2012 Olympics. And I remember I was maybe one of four journalists standing on the sideline, you know, talking to Abby Wambach and Alex Morgan and Carly Lloyd and Megan Rapinoe. And you can't get near her now. You know, you couldn't, you just... And it's just evolved so greatly. And funny, I was talking to Alex Morgan the other night at the Columbia game in the quarterfinal. And, you know, this team is raring to prove everyone wrong. And they know that the world's caught up. And they know that, you know, they were trailblazers, but now they've got to keep it up. But I think that a lot of the fans and the media, I think they're excited about Emma Hayes and what that next phase might look like. And you went from footballer to manager, as did our manager, Mikel Arteta. You were there at the very beginning with Cincy, building from bottom up. Some folks still wish that you were there. There's no doubt about that. And then you kind of moved into USL, which I'm a huge fan of USL soccer, as you know. My club down the road here, Orange County Soccer Club, I have a good friend of mine now who's an assistant with Jermaine Jones up in Fresno. USL football is so much fun, and there's a lot of talent that goes from USL not only to MLS but also Europe as well. You are a championship winning manager. This is the ring. I mean, that's pretty sweet, that ring, let me tell you. I don't know how many diamonds there are in that one, but that's one of the sexiest rings I've seen.
It's right behind me.
Is it? I'm sure it is. I mean, it's brilliant. And, you know, we touched on it earlier in the show, but to swing it back to the Arsenal a little bit too, I was a skeptic about Mikel Arteta at the beginning. There's no doubt I was very critical of not his appointment at all, but the kind of start, the first season and the following season. And Kev always used to say to me, "Soph, it's the players, it's the players." I'm like, how can this be just about the players? The manager has to be, you said, accountable, culpable. But now when you see that he's turned this squad around and it's in his own image, and I always say that really good managers build a team in their image. And you mentioned Pep and Klopp, even Antonio Conte, that Juventus team. You know, you look at what Zidane did with the Real Madrid team, what Ancelotti's done. They all become Simeone and Atletico. You become an image of your manager, the team does. And even though he won the FA Cup, a lot of us thought, well, it's with Emery's sloppy seconds, if you like, and he's failed in the domestic cups. You've been there footballer to manager, and I don't care what league that you're managing in, winning is so hard. It's not easy. What do you think of his journey as a manager, John? And in comparison to your own experiences, what Arsenal fans, you know, should be looking at right now? We're very close, but when you've got the juggernaut City and you've got Klopp and you've got Pep, two of the greatest managers of all time ahead of you, I do think what we're achieving is kind of insane. What's your take on Mikel at this moment?
I think you articulated so well, Sophie, it is a journey. It is a journey. It's a long up and down journey. It is learning through the failures. It is making the mistakes. It's questioning yourself as a manager on lineups, on approach to the game. And it's constant. And it can be a very lonely job. And there's times when you're going to have the fan base get after you and question you about everything, like you said, and it's hard. You've got to you've got to stay stoic and steadfast in your approach. You've got to be a great communicator and get it across. And he's very determined. He's a hardworking man. And I've never met Arteta. I can just tell his focus is laser sharp. And it was always going to be a big task at Arsenal, change philosophies, to change the culture, to change things in the dressing room. What is that like on a daily basis? And it's hard to come in and establish yourself when things have been established in a club. It's easier to come in and start it from the ground up, similar to what I did in Greenville, and say, this is our culture. This is what we do every day. We don't bend from that. And you can build that up because you put the right people around you. It's harder to go into something and try to change the mindset and change the behavioral patterns. And so that always going to be a big challenge for him. And now you see the success that he has in the style of play and the players that he wants. Gets caught, and all managers do, is, I want this player. Well, you can't have him. He's too much. All right, well, I'll settle for this player. But then that affects the way you play. So I'm sure it's still going to take time, you know, as it did with Arsene Wenger, you know, to build it. And still people question Arsene Wenger. So I'm like, you know, you're always going to be questioned no matter what. And that's the emotions and the connectivity of the game, the fan base, to and the media, to wins and loss columns. But it's the overall process of building helps you become a top manager. And that takes time. And sometimes you don't have it. You don't get time. That's the hardest part of our job is that.
That's a great point.
Six or seven games and you're out. You know, you've got to make an impact right away. And so it's important to do things the right way. And he's doing it. Wow, 6-0. Oh, what a display that was, by the way.
I'm going to put Mark's question up for you, but I do want to ask about what coaching qualities do you admire about Arteta, and do you have any criticisms about him? I like not staying in the technical area.
I'm a big passionate man myself, by the way, and I've run on the pitch sometimes to celebrate because you're a player and you kind of do it as a player. So you always have to pull yourself back and go, calm down. You're supposed to be the leader. So I think his characteristics, Stevie Rounds is a friend of mine. I talked to Stevie when he was working with Arsenal, and I'm like, what's he like? You know, and he's like, oh, he's laser sharp, Arxie. And I'm like, you could see it. His focus is, he knows what he wants. When he gives a talk or a speaking to the players, whether it be a group or individuals, he knows what he's saying. He's not making things up. He's prepared. So this is a guy that does his homework. He's always been one of the fittest players. And so he's going to demand that fitness from players as well. He's going to demand everybody on the pitch to put the effort in, and nobody can get a free pass on any given moment. So he's going to demand that from him. I think as a leader, he's grown into the leadership. I think he was always a quiet assistant manager. So it was going to take him time to be his own man. He's got to find a way to do that. And so I think you're seeing the best of Arteta right now. He is, he has become his own man. So I would say that he's a committed person. You can tell he loves to win games and he is fierce. I mean, honestly, but I also can also, from what I understand from different people and personnel, and I'd love to get Super Kev's ideas on this later too. And I'll try to check in with him, but it's more about, how much balance can you have within your group of players? Meaning you do the work and then you enjoy the moments. You've got to have fun. You've got to have the banter. And that's the camaraderie. That's what makes a team one. It's team first mentality. And I think he's been trying to push that across to everybody in the Arsenal group. And that takes so much work. It really does. To get everybody to buy in. And I think he's finally got that bought in now.
It's funny, when we spoke to Rebecca Lowe together and she had just interviewed Mikel, she was saying, I think this is Mikel's to-do list, you know, every day. Arsenal, 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 the wife.
I don't understand who you're playing for, who's giving you the opportunity. If you don't respect the club, you shouldn't be there. And I think he's done it well. I think he's done it very well. He's made it important again to understand the history of the club, without a doubt. Because everybody goes through changes. Right? Arsene Wenger was successful, and whoever came after Arsene Wenger, it was going to be big shoes to fill, whether you liked him towards his career or not. And that's the legacy. You know, you've got to take over from somebody else's legacy, but you have to put your stamp on the game. And I think the more you coach, the more seasoned you are. It's like a spice. You become more, or a fine wine. You start to become like a Brunello di Montalcino. You get a nice 2013, or maybe even a 16 is still pretty good. But if you get those at the right moment, oh, it's so nice. It's so nice. And I think he's, over a period of time, he's finding his balance, you know, in management. Mm. Not sometimes he's back up to say anything.
Do you think our moment is close? Do you think this is the moment?
I'm scared to say it. Because my Liverpool's at the top of the table.
Klopp's got the, we were talking yesterday on the show about footballing gods, and maybe that's, you know, Klopp riding out of Anfield in the, you know, sunset with one cup here, one here, maybe four, who knows? It's gonna, I was saying on yesterday's show, I don't think I could take a final day of this. I want to be part of that. As a fan, I've been dreaming about it, to just be involved again on the last day of the season, you know? I'm not sure my heart can take it. I mean, does it feel like it's the Klopp swan song moment? Does it feel like it's Pep's dominance again? Or does it feel like Mikel's going to pull off a sensational kind of league victory with two of the best managers that have ever managed in the league ahead of him?
It's again, Mark Bright would always tell me, Harksy, don't bet your heart. You got to bet with your head. But my heart tells me the whimsical storylines of Klopp, like you said, running off on his horse in the set with trophies and winning the league again. And he's brought so much success to that club. He's changed. Talk about an idealism. This guy brought so many ideas to Liverpool, and the right players and the combinations on the field and the culture off the field has been absolutely amazing. And you see what Arteta is doing, seeing what Pep's already done over the years. I mean, top manager, you know, just like Carlo Ancelotti did. Like you mentioned Ancelotti beforehand, mm-hmm. fantastic manager, you know. And they leave their stamp on players that they manage because they put their heart and soul into everything. And you see that's what Arteta is doing now. And he's got every chance in the world with this momentum. Mm-hmm. And you know, momentum in teams, Sophie, carry you so far.
Yeah.
People, I mean, you talk about, and you see Simi right there, Simi Superstars writing, it's Mikel year, though, if you believe. Well, my son gave me a Christmas card, and he's like, believe, Dad, believe. And I'm like, yeah, Dad, I've always had believe on my door when I was managing. Because you have to have the players believe it. And it's funny because some of them, no matter how well they do, go, oh, it's like, the hope that kills you in England sometimes, you know, and the fans carry it.
Yeah, I love that, because I actually think that we're playing like a team who believes it now. I don't think we believed it last season, John. And I think once you lose players like Thomas Partey and Saliba and Tomiyasu, you know, there's doubt in players, injuries create doubt because you know what's coming next. But this season, I truly think whatever happened in Dubai, they've come back from there and they believe that they can win. It's a different vibe. Now, the proof will be in the March, April, or May pudding, but I feel like it's a different vibe.
It's a way different vibe. And it comes about the personnel. When you want culture to change, it's the people that you have working for you. Whether it be, and you talked about this even last year when we did a show, and you were talking about Odegaard. What a player. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that he breathed belief into his own team through the midfield. And then you talk about Martinelli and Saka. And I mean, look at these players. I mean, what Arteta's getting out of these guys. I mean, these are fantastic players, man. He's motivating them. He's pushing them on. And that's the key to it right there. And you talk about, and Matthew Hudson saying it, the same thing. It is a powerful motivator. When you believe in somebody and then they finally get there and they go, oh, there's the moment. As a manager, that's when you step back and you just smile. And there they are. Mm-hmm. They already know it.
I love it.
They've got it. Run with it now. They talk about that swagger, right? You get a team that has swagger. And it's a way of being positive, you know, and Declan Rice comes into the side. I mean, some of the signings he's made, and Raya Angol, and I mean, you're talking about these are fantastic players anywhere, right? These are fantastic players anywhere, never mind being in an Arsenal side. So to, for him to organize that, put that together, and to fight together, wow, that's pretty special. So what a great story it is so far with Arsenal. And look, I mean, it's going to come down to the wire. Without a doubt, it's going to come down to it. I'll be overseas, actually, in the first week of April. And I'm going to be hitting up a couple of games for Liverpool. I always am a sucker to go to an Arsenal game. My daughter will be like, she's at Oxford University doing her master's. And she'll be like, Dad, are we going to, are we going to the Arsenal? I'm like, you're an American girl. What did you say to me? Are we going to the Arsenal? Like, who speaks like I mean, you're part
I love
of our
her
family.
Already.
So she's so funny. So I'll probably sneak into a couple of games over there with Arsenal.
That's awesome. And by the way, how proud must you be studying at Oxford? And that's difficult stuff over there. So that's pretty impressive. And also lots of listeners impressive. Delta Source, John Harkes, there's a name I haven't heard in 30 years. Big up, looking sharp, man, like he could still play. Wednesday should give him a call. And then Chris says, for those who don't know, go back and look at US players John played with, a golden era for soccer. John, a legend of our US soccer development and one of the pioneers that paved the way US players to play internationally. All respect. Also, David, reminiscing your first goal for Wednesday against Derby County. It was a screamer. Darren saying, John Harkes, such a legend, man. I love it. Brilliant stuff. Really good. And there's there's a couple more questions if you have 1 minute to answer, maybe real quick. I don't want to leave anyone hanging. From Aditya, John, what do you think is the one thing that made you stand out as a player?
I think it was no fear. I never had the fear of failure. I think a lot of people sometimes misinterpret that as overconfidence or whatever, but my mom and dad raised me. We didn't have a lot of money. It was a blue collar team town that I grew up in, Kearney, New Jersey, really tough town in the streets, and you had to survive and you always had a chip on your shoulder. And I think, you know, my mom would try to raise me. She was from Paisley and my dad was from Dundee, and they'd always be like, you know, always go into the place like you own it, and always try to have confidence to, you know, and when you struggle and you know, it's okay, but you still got to find a way. That's part of your struggle. That's part of your journey to get back up again, learn the lessons that you get through the hardships in your life, whether you make mistakes as a person or as a player or whatever, you learn from it and you carry on. And I think I was always that player that I just, all my players that play for me say, you're such the optimist, you know? And some people will say like, oh, you're an optimist, but you're not a realist, you know? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I love people. I love the game. When you touch the ball, it just brings me to life and I feel like I'm home. And the game has been so good to me, and I'm very, very, very fortunate that I had so many great people around me to help me get where I was. And you're only as good as the people around you. So you know that.
Yeah, totally. One more here from Lynn. John, playing here in England, do you think that gave you the platform to go back to the States to represent the States in the way that you did?
Yeah, without a doubt, Lynn. It was more of like a testing ground for me to see if I could make it. Back in those days, Lynn, I had so many people shouting at me from I was trying to get a contract and playing reserve games and trying to show how well, and they're like, go home, Yank, and all that stuff. And I think it just motivates you to fight more and harder for what you believe in. And but once I, you know, was able to have some success overseas and play and compete, you know, you come back to the States. Yeah. And it helps you a great deal because they know that you were in the trenches, you know, in the difficult times, and you fought for something. So along that journey, you built up a lot of resilience in your own character, your own personality. And so coming back to the States was great to play in established Major League Soccer in 1996. And look where it is today. It's crazy. it's very fortunate to be part of it. It's just great. Great people. Really.
Okay. So I'm going to get you out on this kind of three-pronged last Parksy question. Are we going to see you manage again anytime soon? Because football needs you. And are you upset about what's happening with the US Open Cup? And maybe, like, is Inter Miami a good thing or a bad thing for American football, soccer?
Okay. do I want to coach again? Yeah, I do want to coach again. I've had some conversations about coaching. I've also had some conversations about being a sporting director, which I was very fortunate enough at Greenville Triumphs to be the sporting director as well, and learn the business side and negotiate contracts and partnerships and have budgets. And so that was like, wow, incredible learning. And talk about sink or swim, right? You're thrown right in. So yeah, I'm waiting for the right opportunity. As you know, family is super important to me. And Cindy and I started the club together, my wife, and she was a director of soccer operations. And with family, her dad had COVID, and now her mom is ill, and my parents are struggling a bit. So it was more about me coming back home, and I had to leave my job because of that. It was because of family. I didn't leave the job because of the players or the ownership group. They're absolutely brilliant people in Greenville. Absolutely fantastic. We want to take that club to bigger heights, but I did leave it in a good place. And so wherever football takes me in my next journey, I'm not sure. But it is great to be back home where I am in Virginia near DC. And the second part of the question was what? What was the second part?
The US Open Cup, a lot of fans are very upset with kind of what's happened with the US Open Cup. And then we'll finish on into Miami.
Yeah, the US Open Cup, it's always been to me like the FA Cup. That's our history. And I've loved it, you know. And when we came back to establish Major League Soccer in 96, we won the Open Cup with DC United. And it was one of the prestigious awards that I can win. It's like so much steeped in history, you know, oldest trophy in our country. And yeah, it's a shame. People talk about it had to happen because there's so many other leagues and games. There's too many games for Major League Soccer now. And they're playing these leagues. My son is with New England Ian, and they're playing another game on Wednesday night, and they've got Saturday, Wednesday. And it's just such a congested schedule. It's crazy. But to have them pull out of the Open Cup is wrong. They have to do the Open Cup. I really wish they would, because we're trying to establish the reason why I'm coaching in the USL and to build clubs around in communities all over the country is to help build the structure and the, you know, that you have in England. You talk about 92 clubs over so many divisions, and we don't have that here. So we need to establish that first. We need to catch up to all the history in the rest of the world. So it's important to still have them compete in that tournament. And it's, I really wish they would change their minds, to be honest with you.
That's why I love it too. When I've lived here for 23 years now, and I've always loved the US Open Cup because it's the closest to the FA Cup. So yeah, I hear you. And we'll get you out on, is Inter Miami a good thing or a bad thing for football here?
I would say yes and yes. it's a good thing. Sometimes it can be a bad thing. Look, I mean, it's inevitable you need growth. You know, people asked me when I was still playing in the league, my last season of 2002, and they were like, Harksey, do we need the league, Major League Soccer, to have like the big clubs like Arsenal and Manchester United and Chelsea and, you know, Liverpool and blah, blah, blah? Do we need those clubs to stand alone? And I said, well, we're still too young. If you start doing these big clubs that spend all this money, but the other clubs can't compete, they lag behind. We still need to establish it at one entity, make sure that we sustain that. Is it sustainable, the business operation? That's the bigger question. Now, you look at Jorge Mas and Beckham and all the money that they have in that club and the money they're spending and the players. Has it been negative? No. Has it brought more business and streamlined the sport and brought eyeballs from the world and interest from everywhere, and that ripple pond effect, people on the outside looking in, it's been brilliant. Absolutely the best. So is it sustainable is the bigger question. Is that going to help our league become better league, or is it going to be mocked by the rest of the world? Like, oh, you're getting all these older guys again, you know? And I mean, to get Messi playing a major league soccer, it doesn't even make sense in the same, you can't even speak about it. Mm-hmm. So, and he's still doing it, but it's almost like, oh, these old men now are playing in a youth all-star game. It's weird. You know,
yeah, but at the cost of DeAndre Yedlin having to go to your old club, Cincy.
Yeah, that's correct. And you're right. And so you want it from a business standpoint, but you don't want it because it takes away what the game stands for. And respect and the fans, and you don't want fans paying spending $1,000 to go see one game. It just doesn't make sense. But from a business standpoint, they've got to figure that out. How they do it, but is it great to have a player, the best player in the world, playing in your league? Without a doubt, Jordi Alba, Luis Suarez comes, but he's coming. It's just ridiculous. But I don't think it's sustainable. But they're doing something that's really great. When I was a ball boy for the Cosmos back in the day, so someone just sent a message about the Cosmos. Yeah, there you go.
Pele loved John, you guys. Pele loved John.
Oh, Pele was just absolutely incredible. I was like Uncle Edson, you know. We were like, they were just legends. It was like an world all-star team in our backyard. Beckenbauer, Canales, Stevie Hunt, Dennis Tuer. I mean, you can go down the list, all these players. And, you know, Carlos Alberto. And it's just ridiculous. And now you think about it, that didn't sustain it from a business standpoint. No. 84, that folded right when I was coming out of high school. And I thought, that's where I'm going to go play. And I ended up playing at UVA on University of Virginia. And then that whole transition into being a pro came later, but I hope it doesn't upset the apple cart much. But right now they need to make some changes to make it work.
And you mentioned Carlos. See, I could talk to John forever. This could be a 5-hour show. One of my favorite interviews I've ever done was Carlos Alberto. It was one of those moments where when I was actually asking him questions about the 70 World Cup and Pele, I was pinching myself. And when I told my dad was like, sometimes when I say, oh, I've interviewed this person, when I told him I had interviewed Carlos Alberto, he was like, what? completely lost his mind. And everyone's really been enjoying this conversation as well. And I want to end on this comment from Nikhil. John, you've motivated me with what you've said there. As an immigrant living in Scotland, trying to make an honest fist of it, we are often subject to a bit of racist comments and treatment. I'll prove them wrong. And he was on our show last night as a fan, just phoning in, just a wonderful, wonderful young man. And this is the beauty about, you know, players and people like you and Super Kev. You go beyond the pitch, which is why today's show is called Beyond the White Lines. There's things that you do and impact that you have. And, you know, you guys give us some of the greatest moments of our lives through football, but then what you do off the pitch as well is just as impactful and important.
Thank you, Sophie. Thank you.
Well, thank you, legend.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. No, don't use that term too loosely. It's another another footballer trying to make a game. But great fans to everybody. Hello out there, and all the best to Arsenal and the journey with Arteta towards the end of the season. I'm sure we'll come back and revisit.
We will.
Don't leave it too long until you invite me back, okay?
No, I won't. Let's do another show at the end of the season, and either you'll be celebrating as a Liverpool fan or we'll be celebrating as Arsenal fans. But somehow we'll still come together and have a great conversation.
Absolutely. It'll be great to see you. And
thanks,
all the
John. Thanks, Hoxie.
Everybody. Thank you guys so much.
And thanks, squaddies. We'll be back live on Thursday with Natalie Sawyer from TalkSport for a review of the Brentford game. In the meantime, follow John on Instagram, jharksy6. Thank you again, and go enjoy the football. And those listening on replay, thanks for listening too. We'll see you on Thursday. At ease, everyone. And as Super Kev says, don't forget to tell your loved ones you love them. Night-night.
Yeah.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.